everybody. Welcome to a Friday edition Bulldog Hour here until 3 today. Normally, we have the 2 hours for you, but we are a little bit different today because of the Bulldog basketball game tonight, which will tip purportedly at 8:30 last night, as we figured it was much closer to 9 o'clock. It's one of the things happening during conference play, even when it's just one game in front of you, which was the case last night. You not only have the import of the game, and obviously for Utah State, they had a pretty big battle going on just to get to tonight. But the other thing is, because of now the reviews that take place for flagrant fouls and other things, the minute you have the opportunity for officials to go to the monitor, you're going to see games that are lasting longer than 2 hours. And last night, that was certainly the case. They tipped on time with the early session game, the Utah State and Mexico game, but it was 8:30 or close to it by the time they finished, and they didn't even get to overtime. So if you get an OT game, it might be 2 o'clock in the morning by the time you finish in the East. But anyway, tonight we are figuring a 7:45 pre with Q and Paul, and the schedule will be set up like this. We'll go 2 to 3 today instead of 2 to 4. That'll bring Nick and Nick up an hour earlier. They will go 3 to 5 with the zone from Fieldhouse, and then CG will come up live from the concourse there at Thomas and Mack at 5 o'clock, and he'll do his program from 5 up until pregame time. Matter of fact, I will rejoin him around 6:20, and then the tip-off show and the pregame itself with Paul and Q will lead to Fresno State's battle tonight, which, if it's anything like the first two times these two teams have played, we're going to have a very, very close game. You know, going into last night, I had mentioned on air when CG had asked me about the game as far as the final score might, because I'd asked Daryl about it prior. I thought the final score last night would be 15-point margin. I think I picked 75-60. As it turned out, the Bulldogs were right around that mark, but they held Air Force well under, and it wasn't even close. Hopefully that augurs well for tonight. But with the two games being one-point games, Bulldogs winning in Logan and then Utah State winning here, you can pretty much guess, barring foul trouble or an injury of some type, these two teams figure to play it right back to almost dead even. Weather last night helps Fresno State because you didn't have the pressure late and you got some rest, or whether Utah State is more ready because they played a close game, who knows? I think right now, if I were to guess, I think the Bulldogs are going to win this tournament only because, watching Nevada yesterday, it is apparent to me that the Wolfpack are looking at next week already. Utah State now, with their win last night, should be in. You know, the experts, the bubble tiers, all the guys that go through this stuff, you know, the Jerry Palms and the Lenardis and all the bracketologists, they have Utah State in. I don't know that they would have been in for sure had they lost to New Mexico, but if Utah State is in, and we know New Mexico or Nevada is in, the Bulldogs now at the very least line up to be for sure the first team chosen in the NIT. That is not something that we want to look at now, but it is the reality for the club. They know that they should be the first pick out of this conference if the other two are going to the NC2As, and what Fresno State would like to do, win the thing and make it 3 in the NC2As, unless that impacts Utah State. So I think the Bulldogs are going to win this tournament, but you know what? Tonight could be another one of those nights where we saw Huggins nail the shot in Logan, but we saw Merrill make the big shot here. It may just come down to that, but we're looking forward to it. The game will be on CBS Sports Network as well, but stay with us on 940. Okay, to talk about all of that, our good friend Jackson Moore at BarkBoard.com. We want to not only touch upon basketball, but spring football as well. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, Jackson. Looking forward to tonight. And like I said, if they tip before midnight in the East, that'll be even better. And I know the guys that are sitting back at the studios in New York for CBS Sports Network really hope they tip before midnight. All right, that's all I can tell you. But I think it was 11:54 Eastern time when they tipped off last night. So we'll see. Before we talk basketball, I want to address spring football. And, Jackson, the first thing I do want to mention, we do this all the time, you guys have a sale going on the board, and I've told people this over and over again. If you have a chance to get to the premium side, please do so. And what offer are you throwing out there right now, my friend?
Yeah, we've got a deal for this week. It's 3 months for the price of one, or if you get your first month free, you get two, or if you get your first month, you get 2 free months on top of that. So whichever way you want to look at it, you're getting 3 months for one price, which is less than $10. It's less than the cost for a tri-tip sandwich or where you can find it around town or anything like that. So we're pretty excited about the deal and the price mark and the length of time it covers you for. It'll get you through spring ball, definitely, through whatever takes us through basketball season, how long that may last. And also recruiting for 2020, that's definitely picking up. We've got some big-time camps across the California that we'll be at covering where Fresno State targets are at. And we've already dug into some of the local guys for 2020. Of course, we talked to Jaden Casey, who's the headliner already, is the one commit in the class. We've got about a 20-minute or so interview with him on our premium side. And, we've got a lot going on. We broke the news about Hunter Rickey to our premium board on Monday, or Wednesday. So just a lot going on there, and I hope people will take advantage of it.
Yeah, no question. It's well worth the money, and it's a great chance to be a true insider. And also the combination of what's going on the board and what Steve and Harry and Mike Stovall now and everybody's doing with the QBC, a chance to take ownership in many respects to this football program in an emotional sense as well as a tangible proposition as we head toward spring and then the very aptly named fall camp that we kid about all the time. One more time, Jackson, fall camp in Fresno in August. Make sure you bring your jacket. That's all there is to it. And that's all you better be wearing, just a jacket, nothing else, all right? So you just go out there, just that could lead to other issues, all right? I'm just telling you, that a jacket in August is a temporary proposition. You may keep it all year long, right, Jack? You're always bundled up, aren't you? You're always cold. Isn't that the case?
Yeah, I've been wearing a jacket out of the spring practices these last couple mornings.
Well, that's different.
It's bizarre to be in Bulldog Stadium with a jacket on at practice time.
Well, look, the sun is out right now at Bulldog Stadium, and it's in the 60s. Trust me, in fall camp, the sun will be out, but it won't be in the 60s, even in the middle of the night. It probably won't be in the 60s. And Teddy had his time in Canada. He's a SoCal guy. He enjoys all of this sunshine. You know that. All right, anyway, check it out if you get the chance. Also want to mention that Bat and Ball Sports, and this does hurt the Fresno State baseball program. The 3-game series at Colorado Springs has been canceled because of the weather. I mean, here we go again. We've had rainouts unexpectedly in Fresno and in San Diego. You don't think that's going to happen, but you figure if you've got a trip scheduled this time of year to the Mountain States, look out. And so the Bulldogs lose that entire series. And the last I checked, they lose it as far as on the schedule. And last I checked, Jackson, I don't think there is any kind of machinery to make this up, right? They're just going to let those three go by. Is that correct?
I believe so. Logistically, it's hard to do. I mean, they're pretty much going nonstop, and then the conference tournament hits, so it's really tough to do 3 games in a row like that. That's tough to squeeze in anywhere. And with the new RPI set up where road wins are much more valuable, it's really tough to lose 3 that you may have been able to get on the road.
And you don't have a lot of home-and-home stuff going for you the way things are set up. And if they do what they want to do in conference, you'll have even less of home-and-homes coming up in the future with this very difficult bat-and-ball schedule that you have in conference because of the weather in the Mountain States. The other thing is the softball team, who is a little bit farther north in the state of Colorado, evidently they're going to try to get things in Fort Collins. They're scheduled to start at 3 o'clock our time, so they're about 45 minutes away. We'll update you later in the day if they do indeed get those games in. All right, Jackson, I want to get back to football before we talk basketball. You brought up Hunter Rickey. Now, I know that he's clarified things, that it wasn't about the competition here. This is the party line anyway. It was about Fresno State being not the right fit for him, that maybe he was a little hasty in his decision-making. Jackson, I'd like to believe that's true, and I will take it on face value, but I also know, and you and I have discussed this a great deal, it is the one position on the field where you can't really tangibly share time. You can be a running back and have, you know, Barry Sanders backed up Thurman Thomas. All right, Barry was able to get in and return kicks, and then last I checked, it turned out okay at Oklahoma State. All right, we've seen wide receivers where you can shuttle almost every other position. You can shuttle in and out. Jackson, I've got to think it has something to do with the hierarchy as far as Reyna on down. Am I right about that? When we're told it's not the competition, it had to be somewhat that, didn't it?
Well, I mean, if you're not necessarily, you know, happy about the place that you're at, if you're starting at quarterback, it would certainly make things easier.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yes,
it's hard to, even if you, that's not the reason, to say it's not a factor. But I think part of the way that you can point to him that being a genuine situation there is that it looks like he is going to go back to junior college for this upcoming season. Most quarterbacks that aren't happy with their situation competition-wise or their chance to start, they'll either look for another D1 program or go to an FCS school where they don't have to sit out a year and just be at a smaller type of college where they can play quarterback still. It sounds like Riquet just kind of wants to do the recruiting process all over again. He just had the two offers from Fresno State and San Jose State when he initially made the decision to commit. But it looks like, based on what we saw, that another year in junior college may result in some offers across the country and just give him another chance to find the right fit for him.
And, you know, Jackson, you're right about that. And when I say that competition has something to do with it, you are also correct in saying there are other factors, and I know you brought that up in your story on the board. And I am sympathetic, and I know you are as well, that it is a position where you don't want to be holding the clipboard for 2 or 3 years, right? I mean, because that is your chance, and it's very rare that you shuttle quarterbacks in. It happens so infrequently, and I'm not talking about a wildcat or bringing someone in for a series. To get set reps, Jackson, just doesn't happen at that position because it disrupts the team. So I think we can all understand that it's a combination of things, but more than anything else, you don't want to see your eligibility go by while you're backing somebody up. That's sort of how it works, right?
Yeah, and Hunter's already used up his redshirt season last
yep.
year, and that was a year where the Bulldogs were just ripping essentially Marcus McMarion and Jorge Reyna. They had Stephen Comstock with the scout team, and that kind of leaves Riquet on the outside in terms of getting those reps from week to week. He was involved in the fall, of course, and now this spring the plan was to work the guys pretty evenly, but however all the factors accumulated together, he was pretty set after that first practice that he didn't want to come back for another one.
What are you looking for tomorrow? I know that Teddy mentioned that he just wants to see improvement. That is the coach speak, but it's also accurate. They're going to be hitting one another for the first time. What are you looking for?
Yeah, it's a good approach just because the whole team, the team that we're expecting to see in 2019 is just not quite there yet in terms of personnel. There's a lot of key guys that are just not participating in spring, whether it be injuries or some guys are rehabbing. You talk about the guy like Natane Muti, of course, who is getting closer to playing, but there's no reason to put him out on the field in spring. We already know what he can do. There's quite a few of those guys that just aren't there, and so it's going to be hard to look at, you know, this spring, even by the time the spring preview comes around, as the finished product by any means. So it is about just improving in general. There's a lot of positions that are going to look very different in the fall compared to how they look now. Definitely the offensive line, where there's three spots to fill and a few other players that are not participating right now. For the defensive's case, there's just barely enough guys to run the two teams out there. When you talk first team, second team, there's really no third team. It's just a couple extra guys. That's kind of where they're limited right now. But there are some things that they can answer throughout spring, quarterback being one of them. If it wasn't a given already, it sure feels like Jorge Reyna is going to be the guy going forward when you take the Riquet out of the equation. Otherwise, there are some other positions, wide receivers, a big battle this spring, offensive line. It's not the full competition right now, but the guys that are going at it are going to have an upper hand by the time fall comes around with all these extra reps. Linebacker is one that feels a little better than probably we felt with three seniors coming out of last year's team. You have Michael Walker back there at linebacker, so that's one thing to watch there too, see how he adapts to the linebacker position. And again, a lot of position battles up for grabs and a lot of extra reps even further than we expected going on right now.
You bring up Michael Walker moving to the LB position. Jackson, is the plan for Walker to become the 2019 version of Jeff Allison, the team leader from the backer position? Is that sort of what the coaching staff figures to see?
Yeah, I think so, Tony. And I think that was part of the reason for him coming back. I mean, there was definitely some consideration from him to go to the NFL draft like Allison and Bell did. But, you know, you don't see too many 220-pound defensive ends. He was,
right.
I mean, he's a special athlete, but even at his size, he was undersized as a defensive end and playing kind of a hybrid version of it at Fresno State. So this is a year not only for him to help Fresno State, a linebacker where they need some instant help, but for him to improve his draft stock as well at a position where he's going to be a much more natural fit at the NFL if he can make it to that level at the linebacker spot. And it's a spot where that he initially thought he was going to play at Fresno State. That's where he was at Azusa Pacific and where he originally was practicing as a redshirt in 2017. So now he'll be back there. It shouldn't be too big of a learning curve, but we'll see if he's as effective. And if he is, he'll definitely be the leader from that spot.
Well, we look forward to what happens tomorrow. And like you said, a lot of the regulars aren't going to be participating right now. So it's really going to come down to fall camp. But we'll watch it on a day-to-day basis and continue to report on it. We naturally look forward to the 31st of August, the game at the Coliseum. One last thing before we talk basketball, Jackson. There's no way that anybody can say that Tedford is going to face a bigger challenge this year than he faced when he came into this program again in 2017. That it's not possible because of what had happened the years prior. But are there certain dynamics about this particular year where it is now that the guys that had been in the program that have achieved in a way they didn't initially, that it becomes a different kind of challenge as it's really all new faces just about now for Teddy? I know he's been the guy recruiting them, but is it different than what he dealt with the holdovers that he said to us were a lot better physically than they had shown? That's one thing you have to deal with. Is this a different animal entirely right now for he and the coaching staff?
Yeah, there is some of that to it. I mean, you look at last year's recruiting class even, you had 21 freshmen. One of those guys did not redshirt. Now you've got 20 guys
right.
who have only played maybe 1 to 4 games now under the new rule of college experience that are going to be fighting for those two deep spots. Even the class before that, we didn't see a ton of those guys. I mean, there's guys like Ronnie Rivers, of course, but a lot of those players, when you think of like the receiver position and the linebacker positions, they've just been developing because the Bulldogs have been so loaded. So there is a lot of new faces, but a lot of them have been here for a year or two to develop, and if they've been developed properly, they should be ready to step in. And then this 2019 recruiting class, best that Tedford's had in the 3 years, and I could see some of those new coming freshmen surpass some of the players that have been developing over the last year or two. You look at Jalen Cropper. He's a guy that you expect to be on the field right away,
yep.
And there's a few of those other type of athletes in this class. But there are a contingency of players that have been part of the reason for this Mountain West Championship run last year and even back to 2017. They return half the starters, which is less than you would like, but it's still a good portion of both the offense and the defense and enough to lean on going forward while you plug in the rest of the holes.
Well, there's no question the expectations are radically different than they were 24 months ago. 22 wins will do that to you, and we've looked at the schedule, and you and I will continue to talk about it on a day-to-day basis, Jackson. The what-ifs are there once again, much like last year. The what-if was, could the team run the table? And they came very, very close last year when you look how close the losses were. Again, if they get one at the Coliseum, not to denigrate Minnesota or anybody else, but Fresno State has a real shot once again to look at potentially a perfect season, and it's not something that you figure to have happen, but it's nice to have legitimacy in talking about it, and we certainly will discuss it. All right, there's going to be a lot of coverage of basketball coming up with CG's program. I'll join him. Q will be on in the pre and post. But we want to, before we get to Las Vegas at 5 o'clock, get your point of view, Jackson. Utah State and Fresno State have played this thing, 2 1-point games. The Bulldogs win there on the Huggins long three. Merrill makes a big shot. here. The Bulldogs fouled late, and it still didn't work out, but they were one-point games. Do you figure to see that kind of nail-biter tonight?
I think so, Tony, and we've seen Utah State play two very good games in this series, and we've seen Fresno State play from behind for almost all of the 80 minutes
yes.
in the two combined games, and one of them they were able to pull it out, and the other one they came just a bit short, and I would like to see Fresno State come out of the gates the way that they have the last few games, and if they can play even instead of playing from behind for the first 20 to 30 minutes, I really like their chance to win. And just from the overall atmosphere of the quarterfinals, Fresno State, we talked about it a little bit earlier, they're the one team that really didn't get pushed to the brink, and it wasn't like they only played 20 minutes and checked out. They physically can't do that with their roster. Deshaun Taylor played almost all the game despite the big lead, and all those guys I feel like are in pretty good rhythm, except for Braxton Huggins, who they need to get him going. If he has another one-point game, it's going to be rough goings, but I can't see that happening twice in a row. Otherwise, I do like Fresno State's chances. I expect it to be another nail-biter, but the Bulldogs should be the more motivated team in a two-team competition where they're pretty even, really.
Yeah, you're talking about the motivation, Jackson. I had mentioned at the start of the show, as you know, that I believe that the win yesterday for Utah State put them in the NCAAs. That's what the bracketologists say. Do you buy into that? Or if you are sitting in Aggie land, are you saying, you know what, if you're saying we're only going to get two, we're going to be number two, but if Fresno State gets by us and wins this thing, we, Utah State, could be odd man out. Do you think that has crept into the consciousness of Utah State?
Well, they certainly don't want to take any chances. You never know for sure. But I felt like ever since Utah State won that game at Nevada, became the co-champions later on, as long as they didn't have the ugly blemish going from then on out, they'd be okay. They'd get that at-large spot. And Fresno State at 23-8, it's not an NCAA tournament resume, but it's not going to be a terrible loss either. It's one they already have on Utah State's resume, and it's not counting them out of the at-large bid by any means. So I think they'd be able to survive a second loss to the Bulldogs. I think their resume is just strong enough as it is. And as long as they didn't lose to New Mexico, they were going to be okay.
Well, if that's the case, then what has to happen is Greg Thompson has to call Utah State and Nevada in and say, look, for the benefit of the conference, you two need to get out of the way. We need three in, so let's get the Bulldogs in. One for all and all for one. Do you not agree with me? That's how it should go, Jackson?
Yeah. Well, okay. I mean, yeah, you could have Fresno State and San Diego State in the championship, and both of those two teams are pretty solid and would probably represent the conference pretty well in the Big Dance.
Yeah, and Utah State and Nevada just love Fresno State and San Diego State, so I'm sure the hugs and kisses emotionally would be there. There's no doubt about it. You brought up a couple of things here that I think are very pertinent. One is, and this is something I just talked about the other night with the Warriors and Houston. The Warriors played a game that ended up a two-point game in Houston, but the Warriors controlled the game, Jackson, for 48 minutes, okay? There's no doubt about it. They controlled the game. What you're saying about Utah State, if there is one worry, they have controlled the vast majority of the 80 minutes between the two teams. Matter of fact, that Huggins jumper was the only time the Bulldogs had the lead. You know, it's that auto racing joke. You know, when do you want to lead? Well, the last lap would be fine, right? That's sort of what happened in Logan. But Utah State had that game, and the Bulldogs took it away. Here, Utah State, again, controlled the thing. Yes, the Bulldogs made their run, but Utah State was able to hold them off. Is that the biggest worry, that as far as pace and style, Utah State has been able to mandate in a way that does concern you going into tonight?
It does, but my belief is that the gap between these two teams is not that wide, and I think those two games just kind of played out that way. I think they're getting a third opportunity to see what the two teams can do, and I think Fresno State is not going to fall behind like that for a third straight time. They've had a really tough time with Keita. I mean, he's almost been 100% from the field in
right.
the two games, and I don't know if they necessarily have an answer for him either without getting Nate Grimes in foul trouble. That's going to be a problem. Sam Merrill is, hard to stop by any terms. Any team's going to have a trouble with him. But they can kind of lock down on the role players, try to keep them out of the contributions. I know Brock Miller had a big night in Fresno the last time these two teams played. So if they can kind of limit the damage to those two key players, perhaps they can kind of rearrange the narrative that's been played on these two teams so far.
We had mentioned after the loss here to Air Force, that if something good came out of it, it was a refocusing about the start of the game and what happened last night. And I know that Air Force is not quite at the level of Utah State, Nevada, or Fresno State, though they, of course, won the game here. That you saw a Fresno State team that came out with immediacy. The energy's always been there, but as Hutt said, the focus. Any doubt in your mind, Jackson, that the MO of last night is going to be seen again tonight, meaning Fresno State's going to come out not only with intensity and focus, but they are going to try to pressure the basketball all they can and make 94 feet a tough proposition. Is that sort of what you're going to see from this team, or at least the attempt, both tonight and then if they make it to Saturday?
I think so. I think there's a sense that this is kind of it. I mean, you've got to go all in, and it was hard to do that for an entire season, 30 games or whatnot, with the type of roster Fresno State has. I mean, they've only got, I think, 9 guys in uniform, and some of those players haven't played a whole lot. It's been basically a 7-man rotation with a few extra additions here and there, playing spot minutes. And right now, they've just got to go all in. The press proved to be effective against Air Force. They really won the turnover battle there. And I think they'll continue to do that and put it all out there with their last shot to get to the NCAA tournament. There's nothing to hold back at this point.
I think with Utah State, that can be effective. I think the Bulldog quickness can bother Utah State. Whether it can bother Nevada, I don't know. And, again, it'll be a pleasant dilemma if they have to deal with that. And I'm sure that the Wolfpack would take it, too, because they have to get by things tonight. But Utah State is a team that isn't incredibly quick. Nevada has more athletes, obviously. They also have a tendency, Nevada does, to play a little bit more out of control. So I think tonight you're going to see a blueprint that we saw against Air Force. Then we'll see what the Bulldogs decide to do with that quick turnaround on Saturday if they're still playing. The other thing, you brought up Huggins, and you're right. They can't have an offer from Huggins. Without Huggins, they wouldn't have won the game at Logan. He has got to show up big. But the other thing, Jackson, is something you and I have talked about all year long, and that has been Deshaun Taylor subjugating his game to play the role of it is really a hybrid. Howerton has brought this up, and it's a fair view of it. He's a guy we already know. He's an outstanding two-guard. He's an outstanding defender. He's the best defensive player, in my opinion, in the league, talking about Deshaun Taylor, particularly from the non-center position. But, Jackson, seeing his development as the point guard, and we've talked about it all season, his willingness was there, but the execution wasn't there. Sometimes it wasn't his fault. Sometimes his teammates that were so used to him shooting the ball weren't ready for passes. Other times, Deshaun's attempt was the right one, but his execution was off and he missed people. The performance last night tells you he's really getting this. How important is it to see this guy become a true point guard threat? Because that's what Deshaun Taylor is now becoming. We already know he can play the two just fine.
Yeah, I think it's really clicked in the last month in particular. He's put up assist numbers from the beginning of the year, but we saw even when he went out with the injury, the next 3 games you had Noah Blackwell, who was a true point guard leading the offense, and they scored 90 points plus in the next 3 games, and it made you wonder, is Deshaun maybe better fitted at the two? And since he's rejoined the roster, and, I mean, he's played a lot of minutes right off the bat, but he's become more of himself over that time, and particularly in the last month. I feel like his point guard play in general has just been a lot more effective, and it's been a lot more cohesive with the rest of the team. And, again, as you mentioned, a lot of the other players who are not maybe used to that style of play from him have gotten used to it as well.
Bulldogs started a little slow last night, or maybe Air Force started quickly, but they erased it in a big hurry, and within 5 minutes or so they had taken over the game. So I'm not going to say they were under pressure, Jackson, as they pulled away. But there was one play in particular in the game that I thought exemplified what you're talking about, and that is Deshaun Taylor had a three. He received the pass. He had a three wide open at the top. That's a shot that, justifiably so, he would have put up in the past. But right as he went to lift to shoot, he saw that Blackwell had a more open, easier opportunity in the corner, and he gave it up, and Blackwell nailed it. And I thought, Jackson, that was the mentality of a point guard, and it's something that sometimes as a two you can't seem to get in your head, and evidently Deshaun has been able to make that a reaction because you don't have time really to think about it. There's not time during the game itself to have that conscious thought. It has to be something that's so ingrained that you see it and you recognize and get it there. And I thought that was a breakthrough last night. I don't know if you remember the play I'm talking about.
Yeah, I certainly recall that. I know Blackwell hit a couple threes there, back-to-back. It seems like Deshaun, he's very confident in himself, obviously, but he's gotten more adjusted to when the guy's got a hot hand to get him the ball. And I think we first saw that at Utah State when Huggins was just going off. And yep. We've seen Deshaun in the past want to be the guy to take those shots when it's on the line, and he deferred to Huggins. And I think that was a big moment there with this team's chemistry. And we saw him defer to Huggins against San Jose State just recently, where Huggins was making everything, and eventually Deshaun got his touches and had a career high too. But Huggins had a big lead in that race between those two guys when they both scored 30-plus. And Blackwell as well, he hit a ton of threes in that game, and then against Air Force, he showed that he can chip in, and he was open, and Deshaun got him his looks, and that stretch with Blackwell hitting a few threes really separated the two teams.
And the fact that not only is Deshaun immediately looking for that without having to take time to think about it, but maybe more importantly, what you referenced, Jackson, people are ready for it. Blackwell is looking for that pass as opposed to a month and a half ago where that thing might sail out of bounds because he figures it's going up and he might try to take a step toward the hoop for the board or to try to get back in floor balance, and that's how a ball flies out of bounds and it looks like a terrible pass when in reality all it was a mix-up in communication. So the Bulldogs are much more cohesive, which begs the final question. Do you expect Fresno State to win tonight? And if that's the case, do you expect them to cut down the nets tomorrow?
Well, you talk about the cohesiveness, and the other thing I liked was that they went straight to Nate Grimes last night. He was a guy that had zero points against Air Force, and they went right to him. They went to him a couple times early, and it's been one thing to be cohesive within the guards, but we've seen Grimes come in and out. I mean, a lot of the times he's getting double-doubles, but I felt that that was kind of an early sign that this team is really clicking and that they really come together from top to bottom. I mean, Utah State is a solid team, and we've seen these two teams be as even as possible. I think this game can go either way. And if the Bulldogs do advance to the finals, I'm still not 100% confident against Nevada, but if they can get San Diego State, I really like their chances of dancing.
Well, if what happened in Lawler's any indication, you're not going to get San Diego State until next year. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Jackson, appreciate it. Enjoy the scrimmage, and you and I will talk next week, my friend. I hope people jump aboard this special deal at parkboard.com. Take care. We'll see you.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys. Jackson Moore. Take a break. Come back with Marcus. Bring you to 3 o'clock. Nick and Nick up early today, then CG Live from Las Vegas, then the game itself, starting at 8:30 or thereabouts with the tip. Take a break on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. 2:41 here until 3 o'clock. We are out of the way early today, so Nick and Nick can come up an hour early. They will do the zone from Fieldhouse 3 to 5 and send it off to CG, who will be in Las Vegas. He was in Las Vegas yesterday. He'll have his program leading up to the pregame tonight, which is scheduled for 7:45. I say scheduled for 7:45 because last night it was almost a half-hour delay. It was 8:54, if you want to be precise, before they tipped off. Should have been an 8:30 game, but the game early in the evening session went long. That was the Utah State-New Mexico game tonight. Of course, Nevada and San Diego State will have that slot, so we'll see. But anyway, stay with us throughout the afternoon. Also, before we bring Marcus up, our good buddy Lauren had emailed in and had mentioned that Paul had said last night, because the series at Colorado Springs against Air Force for baseball canceled because of the weather, they might try to get six in here when Air Force comes in on April 12th because the Falcons are in at Biden-Bennett on the 12th, 13th, and 14th of April. The only thing I will say that the B had mentioned that these are games the Bulldogs may lose to the schedule, and we brought it up the same way because I know that Air Force had this happen a couple of years ago and had to play five here, and I know they weren't wild about that. So we'll see if there is cooperation. I guess in theory they could play three doubleheaders from the 12th through the 14th, but that's going to tax your pitching big time. And if you're Air Force, I wouldn't blame you if you said, you know what, we're not going to surrender three home dates to play them there at Biden-Bennett. We'll see what they decide to do. But as of right now, those three games are not going to be played this weekend. We also mentioned the softball team is a little bit farther north in the state of Colorado, Fort Collins, and they are scheduled to start their series at 3 o'clock, so the weather a little bit better if they get those in. We'll see how it works out. All right, let's bring up the aforementioned Marcus Grant, the Culver City Madman, the King of Fantasy at NFL Network and NFL.com, and someone who is still waiting for the arrival of Marcus Jr. M, how you doing?
Yeah, I've actually been on the phone trying to see if I can get him into some side sports at my alma mater that's going to get a tuition break if I could.
Okay, let me explain what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen. He knows where I am headed, so he's immediately – he is like the sneaky defense attorney that I'm the prosecuting attorney, and he gets up for his opening arguments, and he says, what my distinguished colleague is going to tell you, thereby taking away every argument I have. Amazing that you knew I was going to start with an S-hammer about USC and the cheap and tawdry way, Trojan man, that you guys are going about absolutely throwing academics right in the old you-know-what. Great. Now you wrecked it. See, you had to spoil my fun. Fine. All right. Okay, fine. Let's start there then, because I actually was going to start with Limo Larry and what's going on your conference. But okay, we'll start more localized. We'll start at USC, and then we'll work our way through the entirety of the Pac-12. Since you brought it up, because I do want to ask you about Derek Carr and Kareem Hunt, but first, what in the world is going on? I've got to ask you as a guy who had to take out student loans that you're still paying on. I think you only have a couple hundred thousand to go, right? Something like that. Or you don't even, do you even get to the interest these days? I'm wondering about that. But are you offended by this, Emmer? I mean, the fact that, never mind, it could be an athletic opportunity. The fact that there is limited student body, say at Stanford, and you have people that are trying to back room their way in because of money. Are you just accepting this is the way the world works?
You know, it's funny because I think, you know, maybe we have become so numb to how this sort of thing happens that when you see somebody, you know, donate money and get a building on a campus or just make a large gift or a donation, I think we've kind of become numb to the fact that, yes, that entitles them apparently to getting certain perks like having their kids get in. I think for some reason it is a little more offensive when suddenly you hear about people going through these extreme lengths of photoshopping their kids into pictures of sports that they've never played. You know, and it's offensive obviously on that side. It's obviously offensive on the other side too, to be part of a university that you have supported, you know, obviously financially and emotionally, and try to take some pride in, and to know that this sort of thing is happening. So in a lot of ways, you know, I guess it's really an extension of things that have been happening for years at colleges all across the country. This new and added detail makes it seem a little bit more tawdry. And yeah, I mean, as just an alum, I'm upset, I'm disappointed, I'm frustrated, and I am offended by kind of what happened.
Do you know, I know that people got in that shouldn't have gotten in. That's an issue in and of itself that has nothing to do with athletics. But do you know if there were actual athletic scholarships that were taken from people potentially to backroom individuals in that weren't even playing the sport? Was it that bad, or was that just part of the process to justify their entrance into the school itself?
So far, I haven't heard anything about actual athletic scholarships going to any of these students. I think it was just sort of a backdoor way, and I think generally the process was, we'll get you in through the athletic department.
Right.
We'll make up some excuse as to why your kid isn't playing sports, but then at that point, they are just a regular student within the university.
Yeah, the justification was you could get them in a little bit more readily if they were going to be an athlete. Though Mike Montgomery could tell you it never happened at Stanford with basketball, right? Mike Montgomery made it clear that, you know, one of the reasons he left that opportunity there was that he couldn't get guys in that he thought were really deserving. But it is an ugly chapter, and it doesn't hold anybody in good light, particularly the Pac-12, that's for sure. And we'll see what happens going forward. But because it costs so much money to go to SC and Stanford, it's staggering to think about it anyhow. So I guess it was a break for me. You know, I told my kid, you know, better think of something else. You know? So, all right. Now, the other thing is Limo Larry there. How bothered are you by Larry Scott? And people don't know Larry Scott is the very high living commissioner of the Pac-12. And he was, $7,500 a night for the suite that he was hanging with in Vegas? Is he long for this job, Marcus? I know he's trying to dole out shares of the conference. He's trying to sell the conference off piece by piece. But is he just about as Keith Jackson way? He gone? I mean, what's happening here?
I can't imagine he lasts much longer, you know. And, you know, for a while he's, I think, been able to sort of couch this in the right way and I think try to appease as many people, especially the university presidents, as he possibly can. But the ripple effects of his management are just starting to get felt in places where it's a lot more noticed. You know, it's one thing when, you know, you're not getting, you know, when your network isn't on and people aren't seeing tennis matches or track and field meets, right, and stuff like that. It's another thing when suddenly your basketball conference is struggling to put teams in the tournament and your football programs are struggling to really be felt and noticed at a national level competitively. That is when you're going to get a lot of people, not just the university presidents, but then you start to get boosters, donors, and fans in general really up in arms about this. And I think at this point it's becoming apparent that Larry Scott is not cut out for this job. And then on top of it, as you mentioned, he's hanging out in lavish Las Vegas suites. You know, he seems to be living the life during the conference tournament. I just don't know how many more years of this university presidents are going to be willing to abide if they're not getting any kind of returns on this investment.
Yeah, the old Sinatra commercial where he thought Steve Wynn was the towel guy. Remember that? I don't know if you remember that. Now it's Larry Scott peeling out the big bills asking for extra towels when it turns out to be the owner of the hotel, that kind of thing. Well, you know what? Larry's made enough money, I suppose, he can be kicked to the curb and he'll be okay. He'll have to live without the limos, the private jets, and the $7,500 a night hotel rooms. You've been able to do it. I think he can as well. I want to ask you about Kareem Hunt here very quickly. If you're in Kansas City, are you lamenting this, Marcus? Are you saying, you know what, better Cleveland deals with it than us, and are you okay with the league in the 8 games?
You know, my original projection had been 10 games, so I guess 8, you know, it's a couple right off, so I'm not totally surprised, and I guess with the logic there, you know, they I guess certainly it's 6 games, I guess, for the actual act being on video, and then a couple games as added punishment, so I guess I'm okay with that. You know, I guess it's hard to really tell in the world of sort of semi-nebulous NFL punishments. I guess that's fine. If you're Kansas City, though, I understand why you made the move. I think, especially after you had to deal with a Tyreek Hill situation previously, and now there's this new report, a domestic incident or abuse that happened at Tyreek Hill's house that's being investigated again now. So if you are the Chiefs, I understand the situation. I understand you kind of wanting to get away from it and believing that you can figure out how to sort of, you know, replace that production on the field. So the whole thing makes sense to me.
There's a lot of tread left on the tires, and the Browns suddenly become a viable threat to make postseason noise. So I guess the long-suffering fans of Cleveland deserve some opportunity as far as Kareem Hunt. The circumstances are ugly, but hopefully this does not ever happen again, or ever comes close to this happening again. We'll see. All right, last minute, Marcus, you and I have had enough discussions about Derek Carr. He has been given 2 receivers now that could and should make all the difference. This is the last guaranteed year of the contract. The dead money changes radically at the end of this year, too. Is this set up for Derek to succeed or to fail or somewhere just to vet it? Is that what the Raiders are doing? Are they trying to make a decision with Derek, and they're giving him the wherewithal? If he makes it, wonderful. If not, goodbye, Derek. Is that how cold-blooded this could be?
I mean, it could be, you know, but like, let's not rule out the fact that the Raiders could still make a move to try and get Kyler Murray. I mean, that has been rumored that they still might try to make a move and get that quarterback, which, you know, if they make a deal with Arizona and move up to number one, then suddenly Derek Carr might not be a Raider anymore. But I think in terms of what they've given him to work with, I think they are going to kind of put a lot of the onus on him to really make this thing go. And if it doesn't work, then they may likely part ways heading to Vegas.
Your points are very well taken, O King of Fantasy, and I will leave you with this. In the immortal words of Dean Wormer to Niedermeyer, Niedermeyer, you're a sneaky little bleep. All right, John Gruden, you're a sneaky little bleep. So I don't trust him either. So I think you have a very accurate view of this. John Gruden's a great guy. Just don't turn your back on him. That's all I can tell you. Ever, listen, have a wonderful week. Everything okay? Still waiting for the baby, right?
Still waiting any day now. So, you know, who knows where I'll be this time next week. We'll let you know.
Well, tell your wife that, you know what, 2:30's on Friday. They're somehow yeah. cordoned off. Right? Yeah, just try that and then
I'll
run
sure
real fast. Yeah, yeah, don't. Trust me on that. All right. Have a great week, my friend. I'll talk to you next week, I hope. Take care. We'll see you.
All right. Take care, Tone.
All right, guys, Marcus Grant, NFL Network, NFL.com. We're going to take the break, come back, wrap it up, send you off to Nick and Nick after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.